for me, it's I'm so competitive to not take it seriously. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I get too frustrated, but it all goes back to the end of the day where for me, it's about who I'm golfing with rather than what my score is. I'm competitive and I want to shoot, you know, 79, whatever it could be, but that's not going to ruin the rest of my day because I'm there to have fun with the people that I'm with. And that's always what it's going to be about. Whether I, again, whether my average is a 60 or whether my average is a 95, it's still going to be at the crux of the core of everything is the people I'm with and the times that I share over exactly how, if my ball goes in the hole once or twice, you know, faster than it might have, you know, a few years ago.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
I almost didn't get back to my chair in time. That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Musical chairs?
Yeah, it kind of was musical chairs.
That was an awesome intro.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I've heard it a few times, but I'm just saying.
Can you name everyone in it? This is like a bit that I do. I think Andy gets tired of it, but can you name the four people in it? Only one person has gotten it, by the way, Jamie. John Ellis got it.
John Daly.
Yep.
Bob from Bob Does Sports.
Oh, two for two. You got two more.
Oh, it's the boxing guy is the other one. I don't know his name, but it's the guy who intros everyone in boxing.
Yeah, well, actually his brother does boxing. He does MMA.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he does the MMA ones with
Bruce Buffer.
Okay, yeah, and then the last one I don't know.
The last one, sneaky, it's Bryson DeChambeau.
Really?
Yeah, when he's talking about how his driver sucks.
Fair enough.
On the interview, and he's like, if I could hit it down the middle of the fairway right now, it'd be great. But with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
He doesn't need substantiation to be like noted as a good dude because, you know, the hitting over the house thing was such a huge hit. But I did meet him. I met him out at Pebble. I met him at Spanish Bay in the lodge. And he, just to be brief about it, it was the wrong time to meet a dude. And he was awesome.
He seems awesome. He's also one of those guys that it feels like has probably benefited from leaving the tour and going to live for numerous reasons. He's like the one guy that really leaned into social and has also felt like spent the extra time that he has out there. People love him.
I don't think anyone's pulled like a 180 of their public persona like he has.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Maybe WWE where you have people turn heel and stuff like that, you know, bad guys come back and Roman Reigns it and be all good again. But in terms of just the way he was and him and Brooks, and then suddenly people are living and dying by this par three over his house. And then obviously winning last year, I believe it was, it just culminated with everything in terms of his like three, I guess 180, because 360 would be, you
know, all the way around. Yeah. Redoing all of it.
Yeah. His 180 in terms of his.
Well, he was just so fun to watch. Like you would literally tune in just to watch him drive the golf ball. Right. 100%. And then like you realize, oh, the guy can actually play and he's won majors. And yeah, I mean, he seems to be embracing the YouTube and the social aspect. Like the Breaking 50 series is phenomenal. He just brings on celebrities and people and they try to break 50, you know, from whatever tees in these short courses.
I love that.
It's sweet.
Do you watch him?
I'm surprised that the simulator companies haven't mocked it and said, hey, listen, we're going to have it under sim, hit it over Bryson's house.
You can.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, a bunch of people are doing the challenge. So you can download his house.
What a great idea.
You can download it. It looks just like his place, right? Awesome. It's just like one shot. That's all you do. You try and hit a hole in one.
You can't hit anything right now, can you?
No, no chance. I have a 50% torn. It's repaired, though. It's repaired. And it's not as bad as it was. But yeah, I got about a quarter size. Actually, no. We'll say a ball marker.
About the size of a ball marker.
Yeah,
that's a good visual for the audience.
Yeah, out of my heel recently, so I'll be recovering here for a little bit.
But what did you do to be able to have a surgery? Were you like an athlete or something?
It was the wear and tear of a kicking a ball for a long time.
Well, we jumped into this. I didn't know that Jamie was so into soccer until one of the first times we ever did the podcast and we kind of got into your background with soccer. I didn't know that you played and everything too.
We're not talking about me at all today.
Oh, well, you're interesting.
But this is how all this, you know, kind of came together. So Derek, you had followed the podcast, and I saw a video of you golfing one day, and I just reached out and I was like, dude, I would love to have you come on the podcast after the season. And so here we are.
Like, it was probably with Jamie, to be fair.
No, I think the Minnesota United had done like a video where you guys went out.
Oh, the one you did with Boxy.
Yeah. We did.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, they do kind of a player versus.
Yeah, like a fun series
pong,
deal.
You know, ping pong, bocce ball, whatever you want to do. And we have enough golfers where we did a 2v2, kind of a, I would say, scramble. And, well, actually, it was multiple different, you know, for the first three holes at Victory Links, we did different challenges each one. So pick a club and you get to play one hole with each club. You do alternate shot on the one. You do best ball on the others. And it was me and Michael Boxall against Alex Smur and Devin Padelford. And Boxy and I came to play that day. Let's just say that. So if you watch those, check it out.
They're really good. And Boxy had a win song hat on.
Yes, Boxy did.
Yeah, I think that I like put it all together. I was like, man, we got to get these guys on. And then, of course, I knew Jamie would have the connection. So before we even talk about golf, one, you should introduce yourself to the audience. But then two, I want to hear a little bit about just the career. So congratulations. You just retired, correct?
I did. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so congrats. I was looking and did some research on you. It's a long time in the league, too.
Yeah, I was very fortunate enough, recently retired professional soccer player. I played 14 years professionally, 11 domestically, and 3 in Norway. My team is actually killing it right now. So they played Manchester United about 2 weeks ago, which was pretty cool, in the Europa League. We did not play in Europa League when I was there. We were just floundering, trying to stay afloat. Now they've really taken off. But no, I've been fortunate enough to play soccer for the majority of my life, you know, pretty much half my life. I can remember I left college at 19 years old and was able to, fortunate enough, you know, put together a decent career. I played with a lot of really good players that made me look good. That's always
it's half the battle.
Of course. As an outside back, you got to play with good center backs and good wingers. They make you look good. Pass it to the number 10s who put the ball in the net. Easy recipe, right? So, you know, I recently retired and I got, you know, career-ending surgery, and I couldn't be happier to be transitioning into a role with MNUFC now.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So, and then when also I was looking, so you left at 19, so you must have played 2 years at Akron.
Well, I played two seasons. So
two seasons.
One and a half semesters.
Yes. Okay. And in both of those, you went to national championships and you were 1-1 in both of those?
You did your research. Yeah. We lost our first year in the final. I missed my penalty kick in the national final.
It didn't say that. It just said you guys lost on penalty kicks.
Can we edit that out then?
We could. I mean, of course we can.
No, I'm joking. I missed the first PK in the national final against Virginia. We lost and then pretty much went on a tear my second year and went straight to the final, won it 2-0 against, or no, it was 1-0 against Louisville. Again, fortunate enough to play with some all-time MLS players. Jonathan Nagbe was our starting 10. He's been one of the best players in MLS history, and you know, pretty much that entire starting 11 all went pro. So we had a really good team. And again, I was the beneficiary of giving the ball to a lot of really good players and, you know, starting some attacks as a center back, and then was drafted to a team that doesn't exist anymore. So explaining that to my son's going to be a little bit of a hard concept. But yeah, I was really fortunate in college to play for a really, really good team.
And when did MLS start? When was its first year in
96.
The States? 96. So you were still like when you would have got drafted, but it hadn't been around like too long, right? I mean, it's evolved now. Obviously, there's way more teams and all that stuff. But like when you first started, how many teams were there?
Yeah, so I would say, interestingly enough, I think I came into the league almost around the halfway spot because I came in 2011, which was 15 years.
Yeah, sounds about
after,
right.
After it started. And my first year in the league was the last year that you actually played both teams home and away. And it had the old MLS logo, so we play Red Bulls away, Red Bulls at home. And that was eventually changed because of the expansion and because of all the travel. It just became too much, you know, for us to go to Boston and Toronto and Columbus and New York and Philly. It became too much from a team in Los Angeles, the amount of miles that we traveled. So eventually they condensed it to where you'd play each Western Conference team home and away, then sprinkle in some Eastern Conference teams. So I've seen the league really evolve from, you know, where making $150,000 was a decent salary and $300,000 is crazy. To put it in perspective, minimum salary has gone up to $100,000 this coming year, to where now the spending is, you know, gone tenfold, actually probably 100.
You got guys like Messi in the league now,
exactly,
right?
And the league is now a top 10 league in the entire world in terms of player like selling in and outs, and also just in terms of just talent, they've kind of based it off that. So it's been awesome to see the growth of the league. I'm not going to be some old man. I walk uphill in the snow both ways and complain about, oh, if I'd come into the league later. No, it's been an honor to kind of, you know, be part of the progression of MLS and help from a players union perspective to push for player rights. And again, I feel really, really fortunate and blessed to have been part of something for so long, and, you know, to have played with some really good guys to make me look good when at times maybe I wasn't as good as I thought.
So like Minnesota, did you get traded here? Did you choose to come here? I couldn't figure that portion out. And like, obviously, so if you're going to stay involved with Minnesota United, I imagine you plan on being here for,
we love
who
it.
Knows, the foreseeable future.
Yeah, my family,
whatever,
and I
you want
love
to say.
It. My wife works in Carver County. My son has a great daycare, and I signed as a free agent after I left Houston.
Okay, so you chose to come here.
Yes, so Minnesota was the first team to reach out in free agency for me and pretty much made me a deal, and without thinking very much, I knew a few different people that had been through Minnesota. I knew the assistant coach at the time, Sean McCulley, and I knew some of our good friends had lived here and grown up here. So just with a phone call or two, my wife's family's from Canada. They live in Saskatoon now, so it's about a 16-hour drive. It's a city above Montana, and it's 16 to Pennsylvania, so literally about a halfway point in between both of our families. And it's a hockey town in a fun way. You know, we go to Wild games, and my wife grew up in Montreal, so Montreal Canadiens are everything.
Yeah,
and it fit very well. And that was just the outside perspective. And then once we've moved here, my God, it's been a perfect, you know, fitting for the Valentin family in a variety of different ways, on the field, off the field, the friendships I've made, the people I've met. I've been really fortunate because you take a leap of faith as a free agent to sign somewhere, basically from the outside. You don't really see too much of the inner workings. You don't have friends. You know, you might have friends when you go places, but, you know, you really look at the organization, and then you get there and things are better, and then you meet such incredible people, and, you know, your wife and your son integrate to where it's become home, and this is where we didn't want to leave. And I, you know, retiring could have potentially sought out other clubs and done things along those lines, but had initial conversations with Minnesota United because it's where we wanted to be. And thankfully that was reciprocated. And, you know, we're really happy to be, you know, working into next season, being part of the organization. And I couldn't be happier and excited to rehab this foot and get out with the team and get out golfing and get back to normal life. Let's say.
Do you think you'll ever have, you'll have soccer shoes on? Will you have running shoes on? What kind of shoes are you going to be wearing next year?
Probably Copas, just in case the boy. Just in,
soccer shoes.
Yes, just in case the boys, you know, feel they want to test me a bit. I might jump into some 5v2. The odd player might get hurt in a thing. Knock on wood. I don't want any of that. But let's say someone gets tired, they need to pull out. Remember, the old man runs in there and kind of.
It's like the emergency goalie in National Hockey League. We always have an emergency goalie, and like, well, once a season, you always hear somebody, they pull out the emergency goalie and they come in and play.
Exactly. Consider me the two. I'll look at it in two ways. I'm the celeb shot if you're playing, you know, beer pong. I'm the guy the ringer that gets pulled in every once in a while. Or let's say you're at a charity golf event. You're the guy at the par three. Hey, you're going to be the one that takes
beat the pro.
So I'm going to be that guy, right? Hey, we need an extra in the five-a-side game, and I'll step in. Hopefully, don't pull a hamstring.
Yeah, that's all right. It's a good spot to be in.
I would pull a hamstring for sure.
You think you would?
Oh, my gosh.
You're looking thin and nimble and athletic now, though.
Yeah, you're looking great.
Thanks to both of you guys. Let's keep us focused on Zerik.
No.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Do I? I just got skin. So my sister is going through, like, cosmetology school, or I don't know if that's what you call it.
But I think
so. I was one of her models today. So she, like, did her skin pen thing on me. Like, they have to
do
it on models.
Right on.
So I feel like my face looks really red because I had, I just had my little skin pen from
awesome.
My sister. I was her model today at St. Paul College. So I drove right by Allianz.
There you go. Is that like part of the process here where we like set intermission breaks and we both get some?
Where's our skin pen?
Yeah. I mean, I could have her come over, I guess. She probably needs more.
I need as much
graduates.
Help as I can get over here.
That's gonna be your parting gift today.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a skin pen. It only took like 20 minutes. It was fine.
Is that what this is?
No, that did.
What is that thing?
That's a different repair tool.
Yeah. Oh.
They turned out okay. Like any business, sometimes you buy some stuff that maybe isn't.
I feel like you're passing me something.
Well, I got 100 of them over there. But that's a member guest different repair tool.
Right on.
You know, digs right in.
Boom. Right on.
Get your divots.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, there you go. And you got a little ball marker too. That one's a little bit more. You can actually use that one. It looks cool. It's got our cool logo on it. Those had a bunch of different colors.
Where do people find these things?
I don't even think I have those on the website right now. I'm about to do like a big sale, get rid of all of our stuff, and then going into next year, I'll get some more branded stuff. But cool. You know what I want to do? I get you guys' opinion on this.
Those quarter zips. I've been looking at some of those quarter zips on the website.
That's your. I will ship one to you for free for being a guest.
Wow, that'd be awesome.
What I would like to do is start to lean into the member guest branding and get hats that just say guest, maybe with our branding on it for anybody that's ever been a guest on
that's
the show.
That's an awesome idea.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how'd you get this? Like, oh, I was a guest on a podcast.
That's always the interesting part about merchandise or I've realized even shoes and I'm a big shoe guy. So the story behind something is almost better than the product itself.
Yeah, for sure.
When you pick up something and it entices you to ask a question and then you're like, well, thank you for asking. This is what happened. And so whether it comes to the hat or a shoe or a ball mark, whatever it might be, if it sparks that conversation, to me, that's a good product.
Well, there's an item that Zarek has in his bag. Is it a hybrid head cover?
Yeah, it's a hybrid head cover.
I don't know if we're talking golf yet.
In your golf bag? Yeah. We can just do that.
Just talk about that for a second. The story behind it.
Of course you're bringing it up. Well, first off, I will say I got this nice hat after the third time we played. I was fortunate enough to beat Mr. Jamie Rue in a partner match with my buddy Reed from home. And we played for merch. So obviously it wasn't
as Jamie does.
Of course, it wasn't a high.
Our audience is very aware.
No high stakes, 100,000. You know, we're not playing for 2 Bitcoin or anything like that. So we just did something
playing for merch.
Yeah, play for merch. So fortunately, we were able to win the match, and I went in. Jamie got me a very gorgeous white, just plain white Windsong polo. It's going to be one of my go tos next season, and one of my other best friends. I was like, man, I really like this hat. I called it before the round, and then thankfully, he had had a drink or two and was in a very giving mood. So then he also snagged me the hat as well. But if you look at my bag, I've been trying to build out my bag. I'm trying to, you know, make it a little bit more creative. I used to have a black bag and, you know, stock, you know,
head covers and
everything like that. So I only have one cool piece of swag in my, actually two. I have a Bettinardi, I would say alignment stick cover, which okay. I wonder yeah, where yeah. I got that from. And I also
Jamie's
have,
office.
I also have a Windsong hybrid cover. But the sad part is I actually didn't win that. I actually lost the match. So I had to buy a certain Mr. Rue merch.
Oh, and then he gave it back to you.
Yeah, and he gifted it back to me.
I love that
so
much.
And then signed it. So now everyone, that's the only piece in my bag. So, oh, it's a beautiful head cover, right? Leather, black.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. And then, of course, immediately I cannot say so because they take it out and they look at it. And they realize that someone else's name is signed right underneath where you can't really see it. And then, of course, we lead into the story. I didn't win it. Yeah. That's the sad part.
I lost it. I had to buy it. And then I got it gifted back to
me. Yes. Yeah. Triple whammy. So for me, those are the types of things that invoke stories. And obviously, it's an incredible gesture. Thank you very much.
Yeah, right on.
He said he's going to take it at some point. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
We'll see how that
happens. It's
like a lease with an option to buy. Only 17 payments left.
I was going to ask if you still have that Sunday bag that I got you.
Yes.
Yeah, you still got it.
Yes.
I know it didn't work out the way I would have liked to, but...
It's worked out great.
It's not even
a Sunday bag. Dude, that bag is so badass. It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday bag.
It is
absurd.
In typical Jamie Rue fashion, I walked into the pro shop one day, and you've been to Windsong now. We obviously just had our new logo this year and our new branding, and the branding had the members only logo. Yep. It's just like the W.
Yeah.
And there's not a ton of like members only stuff yet.
Of course,
it was very new. There was like a little section in the back, and there was like one bag sitting there, and it was like this beautiful tan leather bag with our members only W on it. And I walk up, I'm like, I want that bag, and they're like, you can't have that bag. I'm like, what do you mean I can't have that bag? And I look, there's a little tag, and it says for Jamie Rue, and I'm like, of course. I'm like, well, it's on the shelf. Like, can I really not have it? Like, well. Technically, like, he hasn't bought it yet, so like you could, but he really wants it. Yeah. And you know, he's gonna get it.
This checks out.
He was gone for 2 weeks, you know, he's traveling, he's doing stuff. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna give him the bag, but I'm gonna buy it and convince him that somebody else bought it.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna ship it to Butler, so when next time he's there, he's gonna go out on the range and the bag is gonna be there. It's gonna say it's from Jordan. So
did you actually pulled it off?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was so pretty cool move.
I bought the bag.
I was so confused.
Jamie comes back. He's like, where's my bag? They're like, somebody bought it. He's like, what do you mean somebody bought it? I was like, well, it was on the shelf. Like, you can't just, you know,
Of course.
It sit there. So that's the story behind that. We're always doing this stuff.
So then when you showed up, as I often am, I was
so confused. How did this make it here? Because I like to have a Windsong bag in Chicago and a Chicago bag here.
Yeah, of course.
So
Wait, so then were your clubs in the bag?
Not yet.
Oh, so it was just somehow somebody you...
I shipped it. We shipped it from Winsong to Butler. Attention, Jamie Rue, or something. We like called the Butler Pro. I can't remember. Maddie helped with it, but
that's awesome.
Yeah. It was a good move.
It was pretty cool.
You got Jamie Rude.
You're right.
Yeah, Rue got Rude.
You're right.
That is
right.
Very much you're what right. happened.
Well, so I want to talk about like we've had a couple of professional athletes, whether they're retired or current, come on, and clearly you've caught the golf bug, and I love to like dive into people's minds about the game, and especially like professional athletes, because I think professional athletes think differently than us, you know, regular humans. Jamie, you guys learn different, like you're clearly at this just different class of like athletic capability, and like I think it'd be interesting just to hear why is it kind of caught this your attention, like why are you getting into it, like do you plan on playing a bunch now that you're going to be retired? I mean, well, walk us through a little bit, and how's the game? If you're beating Jamie for merch, like, it's got to be all right already.
That was a team game. My golf journey is interesting because my parents separated when I was really, really young, and I used to do every other weekend with my dad, and he was a big golfer. And I remember he used to take me to the driving range because he wanted to go, and he would buy me, you know, just rent a driver, get me a bucket of balls, and I would aim it. They used to have targets basically 100 yards away. It used to be a chicken, I believe. And he always told me, hey, if you hit the chicken, I'll give you like $100. And I just, obviously, as a kid, you're thinking, oh my goodness, right? So years and years and years go by. Just that was the way we used to connect. And eventually, I think I hit it once. But that was the way I fell in love with the game, was just because my dad and I would go and he would always watch. I remember watching Tiger at the Masters, obviously the shot. Like I remember being with my dad very distinctly in, you know, in his basement. And that was kind of how I really fell in love with the game, because he used to just drag me there. And eventually it was one of these things where I started being like, hey, we should go there. And of course, you know, that's what I want my son to do. My son's like, hey, let's go golf. I'm like, honey, sorry, we have to go.
I have to.
Yeah, I know. My bad. We have to go play the par three. And that's kind of where my golf journey started. And then I eventually bought my first set of clubs, my, second year in the league in Montreal. We used to play at a club called San Rafael, which is across the street from the golf club of Montreal, where they had one of the, they had a big event there this year. I'm blanking out on it. But yeah, they had a big golf event. I think it's Montreal Golf Club or whatever it is. Bought my first set, and I wanted to be really cool because I was an Adidas athlete. So I was like, oh, I want to get like the tip top of the line, you know, whatever brand new things was. So I got this set of R11 blades.
Because there was a relationship between TaylorMade and Adidas at the time,
yes,
right?
Yes, at the time. So this was 2011.
The R11 line. Sick.
Yeah, so my sand wedge is still an R11. So I got these R11 blades. And obviously at the time, I just wanted to be cool.
And you wanted some blades.
So, knowing nothing, right? And obviously I got bit by the bug and I loved it, but had some really big growing pains, as you could imagine, kind of trying to get my feet set and also having these clubs that are... I have no business
swinging with a butter knife.
You know, having a 3-iron that looks like a hockey stick. I just have no business having
nothing like your first bike being a unicycle.
Yeah, literally. So eventually, just through playing and playing and playing, eventually I was like, oh, this is awesome. So I went to Norway and didn't bring my clubs over. I brought my clubs over the first year, but none of my friends were golfers. I didn't have a car, so eventually took them back. And then one of my close buddies in the team actually bought a membership at a local club, and we went 4 times a week, and we played with the same clubs. His bag, we shared a bag and just played all the time, and that just was how we got really close. Hit my first hole in one there.
Wow, which was congratulations. Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah,
your first?
Well, yeah, my first and only.
Okay, I was gonna say, geez.
Yeah, no.
How many are we talking that you got now?
No, it was my first and only, but the interesting part was it was actually on the first hole. So it was my first hit of the ball. And it went in, and I was 2 under, which basically the guy who I was with was like, you realize it's all downhill from here. And I said, yeah, I mean, not talking about birding the first hole. What about, you know, making an eagle?
Acing it.
Yeah. And then from there, I went to Portland and just kept kind of growing with it. But I would say I didn't start taking golf seriously until I got to Minnesota. I would say I enjoyed playing. And I always tell Jamie this, is I played golf to get away from soccer. Because you go out, you put your phone in the cart. You don't talk to anyone besides your foursome for 4 or 5 hours. Go out, have a few beers. Whether you do or not, you can drink a...
It's relaxing for you.
Exactly. It was a getaway. Our rule was you didn't talk about work. That was the main rule. If you talked, you either had to take a stroke, chug a beer, whatever it was, just because this was our getaway. This was how we enjoyed life. And that was where I really started being like, man, I'm good at this, but I'm I'm too competitive to not want to get better at this. So when I came to Minnesota, started golfing a little bit, was, you know, fortunate enough to play, and ended up in Mr. Jamie Rue's simulator office last winter, and met a Mr. Luke that you guys might know pretty well.
Elfner.
Oh, Elfner.
Yes. And have started taking lessons with Luke. So
there you go. He'll get you right real quick.
Yeah. So basically I look at the past 2 years and I've gone from a 14 to a 12. Now I'm a 9.
Wow. And, that's impressive.
And
I don't know if you know that that's impressive, but that's impressive.
Yes. So I don't really think for me, it's, I'm so competitive to not take it seriously. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I get
yeah.
too frustrated, but it all goes back to the end of the day where for me, it's about who I'm golfing with rather than what my score is. I'm competitive and I want to shoot, you know, 79, whatever it could be, but that's not going to ruin the rest of my day because I'm there to have fun with the people that I'm with. And that's always what it's going to be about, whether I, again, whether my average is a 60 or whether my average is a 95, it's still going to be at the crux of the core of everything is the people I'm with and the times that I share over exactly how, if my ball goes in the hole once or twice, you know, faster than it might have, you know, a few years ago.
Do you think you've I mean there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, curious. That was my long.
No, version no, no, of my no. I have tons of questions, and I'm most intrigued by. Do you think that you enjoy the call it maybe the social aspect or the getaway like a lot of people do, or do you think that it's more of the competitive side of like you're playing a sport that you can't perfect?
What do you think? What do you?
Because you might think one thing, but like inherently, it's the other.
Zarek is competitive.
I'm very competitive.
I would say 99.9% of professional athletes are outside of the maybe, you know, 0.1 that just have the God-given talent in play because, you know, it's what makes them money.
Very competitive. I can't say I'm not. I'm very competitive. But I will say you're also competing against yourself.
100%. The golf course, whichever way you want to think of it.
Either way. So for me, again, if I hit a bad shot, it's no one else's fault but my own. And that's something where when I've played a team sport my entire life, and at times I might play my best game and we still lose. And that's weird concept to have. But, you know, obviously if you go out and shoot your best round, it's you did it and it was all you. And if you didn't play as well, it could be the elements. You know, I actually talked to Luke about an interesting golf psychological tip was if you miss a putt, it's because you misread it, not because you didn't hit it well. And that was the psyche behind, you know, saying that you'll just read the next one better as opposed to maybe my swing's not right or maybe my technique isn't right. So it was to kind of put the onus on yourself to read it better, not double, like second guess your technique in a sense. So for me, it's that aspect, and I'm definitely uber, uber competitive, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I never, ever want to leave the golf course, and I never have, to where it's ruined my day. I've played with people where they don't shoot well, and it's ruined their day, and it's ruined mine in the process.
Those people aren't fun to play with.
No.
No.
So they're I think it's a little bit of everything. And now, again, I've kind of gotten over this crest of moving downward in terms of handicap to where the desire to that I can push myself in something that's not crazy physically taxing was really enticing as a professional athlete, right? As a soccer player, I'd run 10 miles on the weekend and then I could golf on Monday and I would just sit in a golf cart and walk and I could get out and get fresh air and I wouldn't have to like, my legs wouldn't be like, oh man, I'm so tired. So that aspect was interesting. And now it's just, again, a great way to get fresh air. And, you know, we walked a bunch when we played and I actually enjoyed that almost more than, you know, getting in a cart because it's just, you enjoy the moments and every shot's a new thing. So it's a lot of these, stereotypes that play into it. But I think if you embrace those, it actually makes you a better golfer.
Well, so you've gone 14, 12 down to 9. Now I'm really curious to hear what you're working on, whether it's with Luke or just yourself, in the golf game. What are some of the, I mean, people want to get better, right? And I think you're definitely at a point where once you get past that 8 or 9, that's when you start to like, you're starting to get there, right? Like you're playing good golf. What are you working on? Is it mental? Is it swing?
So I would say Luke was my version of my coach. And then Jamie has been my version of my sports psychologist in a way. And to kind of marry those two thought processes together have been great. And I can give you a perfect example is, you know, my last lesson with Luke was working on chip shots. You know, I wanted to get in and around the green, so we went to the back part of Windsong, and we just took a bag of balls, right? And we just dumped them out, and I took my 60 and my 54, and it was just basically trying to work on a few different shots to have in my bag to get myself within a reasonable putt to make, right? You know, I look at back when I, you know, the bigger view when I was a golfer, it was like, cool, let's just hit it far on a par five. Even if it goes out of bounds, I'll take a drop and then I can hit it far again and keep it in play and I'll be
up trying to advance it. Yes, you just get closer to the hole. Every shot, get closer.
Exactly. So then you kind of hone in on, okay, well now I'm, you know, pitching for, you know, I'm pitching up for on a par five for on a third shot. And I want to land it within 8 feet, not just get it within 15 feet. So it's kind of honing in some of those things. So part of it was the technique with Luke, where I'm working on certain clubs that might fit, whether it's a pitching wedge, you know, you go into the hill and bounce it up, whether it's a 54 where you want to land it, or a 60 if you really want to try to go up. I'm not there yet. That's a little bit maybe when I get lower. But in terms of having that technique, I look at Luke, and then I've played enough with Jamie to where I start to now visually think about the shot and then work through it in my head and see it and practice it and now get to the point where I have seen it happen and now I physically have to go then replicate the shot in my head. And putting those two, that marriage, has been really, really fruitful for me of recent. And I think it's interesting because you could probably ask Jamie, you know, we played the first weekend Winsong opened, and then we played at one of the last weekends Winsong was open this year. And I mean, obviously that was a 12-5, and now I'm a 9. So the difference in terms of just everything is it's a lot. I mean, we have plenty of time. Leap. We have a lot to
well, and Zarek got fit this year too. So the idea that he had a new driver in his hand at the end of the season, and it's just different, Jordan. You've seen this before. You see athletes, a professional athlete's just different. And when they get Kyle Okposo or Ben Clymer or Jonathan Toews, like, you know, these guys are athletes. Then you see him with a driver, you're like, oh man.
Yeah, watching Morneau hit a driver was pretty 100%. Ridiculous.
Zarek. It's pounds it. It's just different. The flight is different. It's really
well, good. I've changed my swing. I used to be, you know, I used to stand too close. The first thing Luke said was, first off, you got to get new clubs. He looked at my bag and he's like, your 4 iron's bent, so that's one thing. So I took it out of my bag. I think he unscrewed my 7 iron and said, okay, well, this isn't very good. So he shoved it back on.
Unscrewed it.
Yeah, so I was standing too close to the ball. So everything was in to out, right? So, but I knew how to play my shot. So I was able to make it work, but my misses were horrendous. And obviously I had blades at the time. And then kind of being able to stand back further from the ball. Now I'm trying to hit a little bit of a draw, and with the driver and getting fitted and, you know, playing with, you know, even Jamie gave me his alignment stick. And when I go to the range, I put it at like a 30 degree angle. So it kind of works on that sweeping motion. And I've been in a decent place with my driver and kind of just putting the rest of it together. But again, it's hitting your pitch shots from 15 feet to 6 feet. Right. And then, you know, course management, you know, one thing you taught me our last round was the flighted lies. Where the grass is mowed down, right? So it's gonna
like a flyer lie versus
I had no clue about that.
And there's a lot of intricacies of golf that I think people take for granted.
Never stop learning.
No.
Yeah.
So we this was the whole, I think it's 4 at Winsong. 1, 2, 3.
Par 3?
No, 5. Sorry, over the water. Because I went right and you're like, oh, you're in a flyer lie. He goes, you're this, it's crazy, by the way. Have you played Winsong with Jamie?
A couple times.
He doesn't need a caddy.
He knows exactly where the ball.
Because he would say, "Oh, I'm probably about this far," and I would shoot it, and he knew all the angles.
Yeah,
and spots.
Yeah. So he's been there already. Wherever it is, he's been there.
So he goes, "Hey, you're in a flyer lie. I suggest if you hit it this far, hit this club and hit it well." And I couldn't even see the green. He goes, "Oh, it's gonna be a good shot." And obviously we drove around, and lo and behold, it was there. But it's those types of things that you pick up. And for me, it's, I guess as an athlete, once you, the muscle memory, I think, is a little bit probably easier as maybe someone else. Once I do something, I'm like, okay, I know how that felt. I know what I did. Let's try to replicate that every single time. And that, to me, has been something that's really stuck this year.
How, one thing I'd love to understand is, you know, so I never played really competitively anything. I mean, like, I played some high school sports here and there, but like, I'd be lying if I said I was good, right? Like, I always say I'm kind of that guy that, like, I'm solid at everything, but, like, I was never excelled at anything. You know, like, I can step in. And I'm a natural athlete, but I'm not, like, a professional athlete, right? And obviously, once you get to, you know, that professional athlete level, whenever I've talked to, you know, pros or whatever, the way they learn is so interesting to me. And so, like, with the golf swing, right? Like, I heard, I had a Monty Scheinblum on. He's a, used to be a world long drive guy, PGA pro out in California. And he said, golf is like the only sport that people think that you can learn it at full speed, yeah. right? Like they think that you can just go to the range and like pound balls until you learn it. But in every other sport, you're breaking stuff down into these little different processes. And he gave a bunch of examples. And where I'm leading with my question is like, when you're learning and you're going through this stuff, what similarities between like soccer and golf do you see in like the learning and understanding process, mm-hmm. right? Like I think about just soccer drills, like yeah. when you're passing, you're setting up cones and you're like going through to create that muscle memory for when you're out on yeah. the pitch, right? Playing against people, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you're seeing with golf that you might learn? Because I think a lot of people listening, when they go to learn stuff or they watch yeah. YouTube, they like take it in and they go and they try and do it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot better ways to kind of get those like motor learning functions.
Yeah. That's a really good question. I haven't thought about it in that sense. I would say for me, something I look back on. So I put my clubs in the closet, or at least downstairs for the off season because of my injury, which was a really, really tough day. But I actually started to see a little bit of where my ball striking was, and I'd be curious to get your guys' take on this. It wasn't dead middle. It was, if the club face is here, it was a little bit on the more
toe.
A little bit, but not a crazy amount, just a little bit. So for me, I think about if I'm crossing the ball, I was an outside back. If you're an outside back, obviously if a center forward makes a near post run, back post run, so you have both. So you can choose where you want to place the ball. And there's a defender, you know, in front of me. There's multiple ways I can potentially get the ball around the defender, but I have to change the shape of my foot. So essentially, if I'm in the rough or if I'm in pretty much in tougher spots, I have to manipulate my club face to get out of certain situations, just like my foot is. And so for me, when I'm trying to, you know, again, hit more of a draw, I think about my club face as if I'm essentially going in, you know, in to out, and you're kind of working that motion. Then I think about it if I'm if I'm crossing the ball around the defender, but if he takes a shallow angle, he's giving me this ball so I can wrap the ball around this way. So for me, it's the way my club face interacts with the ball, similar to the way my foot interacts with the ball when I'm trying to cross the ball to pick someone out at the near post or the back post, essentially, if that makes any.
Yeah, it does. Sense. It's almost like, I think with golf and soccer, so there's two aspects, or at least the way I would comprehend it is your foot is the face, but your body or your leg is the path, mm-hmm. right? It's like there's two ways to do it. Like you can hit a draw, right, with your path, which like if I'm looking at your path inside
yep.
to out,
yep.
right, naturally, or to go right would be outside to in, yep. kind of over the top. And then there's the face control.
Yep.
If the path is completely neutral, closing the face will go left, opening it will go right.
Yeah.
But if you were to have like how I used to swing a golf club, over the top, outside to in path mm-hmm. with a closed face,
yeah.
it's actually going to go more right,
yeah.
right? Because it's like, it's almost mm-hmm. like a double negative yeah, yeah. each way. And so that's kind of like I'm learning path this year. I yeah. used to be a face, like my face control was amazing, but my path was terrible. Yeah. I had this like over the top, everything was like left and then would cut back mm-hmm. right. And so because of that, I used to always have a really closed face. Now I'm learning to open it. And it's crazy when you just change something like that, how difficult it is and how much you have to like train over and over and over again to get like that muscle mm-hmm. memory. And I find it funny. Like I imagine you've gone through this stuff in your career too. When like, when you have to make a change like that, like whether we're talking the swing or a putting stroke or whatever, like what's the quickest way you can make that change?
Yep.
Right. Like, is it repetitions? Is it a mixture of repetitions and like, you know, mental? Is it
I think soccer's easier though, because if we learned fundamentals properly early.
Yeah.
We didn't learn golf fundamentals. I probably still don't know a lot of the golf fundamentals. And so we kind of put it together as amateurs. Have we learned golf fundamentals early? Like those guys that you see that are college players or play when they're young.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's such a different deal.
Oh, yeah. It's night and day.
They already have those basics.
So yeah, teaching right. and learning to hit a shape on a shot, it's body position, but it's not as – the acclimation isn't as difficult as because our fundamentals in golf don't match the fundamentals we have in soccer.
Yeah, I think that the most difficult thing in golf is – the difficulty and degree, right? Just a half a degree here or there can make the difference between hitting it in the center of the green or the right or left or things along those lines. So that doesn't have the same exact effect in soccer. And also in soccer, if you have someone making a run, they're also a moving target that could potentially help you out. The pin's not going to be like, someone's not standing on the green trying to be like, oh, it's all good. Oh, wait, no, we're going
to
play this pin.
Yeah, the ball's moving left here. We're going to move it to a back left pin position.
Yeah, exactly.
Mid-flight.
Yeah. So that's the only, in soccer, we have a little bit of help. But I would also say the other interesting one is something I worked on last round we played together was when you make a pass in soccer, you know, it's very typical. It seems very simple. But if you get your chest over the ball and you pass the soccer ball, I think about my putting stroke recently was very, I would say, short back and then kind of jabbing it through. And that wasn't very replicable. And so the last time we played, we kept talking about the pendulum and having the same rhythm throughout each individual putt. And it made a huge difference. And I think about now in soccer, you know, if I have a short back, pull my foot back a little bit, I can't just suddenly, chip it 20 yards. It has, you have to have that nice smooth transition. And that's something we worked on last time, which was a huge difference in terms of speed control and things along those lines. But it's interesting to kind of, as you get lower, the things you start to work on and dial into. But it's fun. It's fun because you're competing against yourself. You're competing against the course. You're with your friends. It's a beautiful day. Like, you know what I mean? There's not many better things. And I've been fortunate enough to play soccer, but I enjoy and I look forward to every single Thursday when we got to get out and play some golf. That was, something I look forward to because it was a new challenge.
So you guys have access to Victory Links, right?
Yes.
And so what would you typically play on off days, and were off days consistent?
Yeah, so we had two off days a week. So Sundays were always with family, with my wife and my son. We used to go do a bunch of activities, whatever it might be, spend time together, always have Sunday dinner. That's big in our house. And then Thursdays, my wife's working, my son's in daycare, so I guess dad has to go golf. So we used to go to Victory Links, and one thing I started doing towards the end was I started just going to the range or going to they have a cool little chipping area.
Victory Links is the one at Wayne Sports Center, right?
Some special people up there, and that short game area is
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I caddied for Siegler when he tried to qualify for 3M. That's right. Victory Links, right? Okay. Okay. I can envision now the practice area with the putting.
So we,
awesome spot.
So we have a good relationship with them through
Todd Johnson's awesome.
And through Manny Lagos, who has a long relationship with those guys, and they really take incredible care of us. We are so, every time we play there, I don't think, and I tell my friends this that play there a bunch, it's like, I don't think you guys realize the good, incredible setup we have.
That's a play. If I lived up there, that's where I'd play.
Yeah.
I love being around that place.
Victory's a good spot.
It's a great course. It's fun. It's got different shots. It's not too hard and where you can't miss on certain holes. So I always tell my buddies that we have such an incredible setup. Like, don't take this for granted by any means. And again, they have this short shot area where you have these turf areas, but then you have little spots in between with grass and sand and bunkers and pins, and you can go and I saw this,
and there's no charge for it.
I think one of the instructors was basically taking around this guy who was getting a lesson, and they basically played just almost like horse, and they just kept playing. Okay, cool, I get this hole, I pick this one closest to the pin, pick your balls up, go to the next spot. And they played for about a half an hour, and I was like, damn, I need to bring my buddies here and do that.
It's cool. Have you messed around up there?
I mean, I've been there, but I never actually messed around there.
You bring your own golf balls.
We'll host you.
Yeah, you hit a little 50.
Would love it.
This one's 54 yards. This one's 33 yards. It's nasty. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I haven't played. You know who else is doing isn't Wayzata making a little course like that?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they are.
I should have an idea what's going on with the renovations. I know people were excited.
Or maybe
about
it's just a short par 3. Maybe not like the 30 and 50. You know, maybe it's like 60 to 80. But
same
concept.
Hazeltine is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of courses around starting to lean into that. Blue Jack's got that cool little short course there. You've been to Blue Jack.
I have.
How did you like Blue Jack? I saw I was finding a golf photo of you, and it was at Blue Jack, and he's been.
Yeah, so I lived in Houston for 3 years. Again, we had played a few clubs around the area. And two of my buddies flew into town and said, hey, we're going to play this place called Blue Jack, Tiger Woods design. I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, sounds fun. And we got linked through, he's a member at LCC who hosted the U.S. Women's Open this year. So they had a friend who connected us with someone who hosted us and, went out. And I remember being crazy nervous because I never played like a proper golf course at this point. I've played, some local muni courses and some, invite places, but this seemed like the big kahuna for me. I never played, and crazy nervous. And eventually, luckily, our the guy who was hosting us was like, man, I'm really, really shit today. I could have a beer. And I was like, I wouldn't mind one. He goes, cool, let's, I'm really bad, let's just go have fun. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. that kind of goes with the whole atmosphere. You know, we're on the range and they got music playing and the targets. And I was like, this is not a normal place by any means. And then ended up playing, and I was fortunate enough to play it twice down there and absolutely loved it because it was playable. It was fun. The ambiance and as Jamie says, the chill, I believe that's what you call it.
I don't know. Maybe I do.
Just the chill, the hang.
The hang. Was second to none there. And the interesting part was, so we played there the first time, and we played with kind of the group in front of us, but they played a foursome in front of us. And on the last hole, we all teed off together. Thank the good Lord. Again, I was very fortunate enough to play an MLS Cup, the highest attended MLS Cup ever, which was in Atlanta, 75,000 people. And I remember walking out onto the pitch and really soaking it up because it was crazy loud. And just, you know, I think it was like the kickoff came straight back to me. My brother's like, just dink it into the corner, the safest play you can do, and get going. I remember hitting that ball and I was completely fine, settled in, you know, thought I played a pretty good game. I teed off in front of 8 strangers at Blue Jack, and I kid you not, I was more nervous for that than I was for MLS Cup. And it goes the same at Winslow. I don't care what it is.
Nothing
teeing
beats that
off
feeling.
In front of the starter, or if you're the group playing through and you're supposed to be the one that's going fast, I don't care what it is. Pac Stadium, Allianz, I will take that any day over 4 people I will never see again in my life because that type of pressure is tough.
And it's a stage at Blue Jack too because they announce everybody.
Oh, that was killer. That was killer. I had a terrible first drive. Terrible first drive.
Because there's water left, so you got to be a little
bit
careful.
Oh, no, I hit it straight. I just topped it. And then my second one, I just luckily just hit it in the trees, and I was like, I'll go find it. But on 18, we teed off, and eventually we grabbed a beer after the round, and I was sitting around meeting everyone. I goes, hey, how's it going? He's like, my name's Ben Clymer. I'm an old hockey player. I play from Minnesota. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, nice to meet you. And then lo and behold, I signed for Minnesota United, and Ben was one of the first people I reached out to. I said, hey, I'm moving up there. He's like, really? He's like, oh, cool. We'd love to have you. Ben's a member at Hazeltine and got to play with him there last year. But, yeah, I was interesting because I actually ended up playing the last hole with Ben, who I guess, I don't know if he's a friend of the program, but I know you'd played a few times with Ben.
We love Ben Clymer.
I love Ben Clymer.
So, yeah, that was a really, really small
He hasn't been on yet. Now that you say that, I should probably text him. He's busy right now with wild stuff.
We can make that happen.
Yeah. No, Clymer's the best. I talked to him. Actually, oddly, probably more than I saw him at the airport. He had just gotten back from Blue Jack, coincidentally. That was just a few months ago when we had,
You know who Ben's tight like with Clymer. Now? Tommy Sopich.
Who?
Tommy Sopich.
Oh, he's a Bettinardi guy now.
Betty's
totally
Betty's,
in.
Betty's hooked.
Once you go down to Bettinardi and you truly get fit for a putter the right way, I think it changes your perspective on putting. And I think people get hooked because they realize how many strokes they probably left out there.
I've never been. And I've heard and I've seen, but it makes
just
sense.
Just go that guy.
Because you figure you have 18 holes, and how many par threes around 3 or 4? So then you're only hitting your driver 14 times, right? And then how many times are you putting?
Yeah, you use your putter the most, and you use your
I'm
driver the second most.
23 putts is what I'm typically doing. How about you, Jordan?
That'd be low for me. I'm probably closer to 26.
I'm not 23.
23. Damn.
Yeah, he's one putting.
Yeah.
Keep talking 16. About Zerik.
No. But seriously though, you figure once you think about golf in that context in terms of the around the green, right? What is it? Drive for show, putt for dough.
Yeah.
That's what they talk about. Yeah. So once that kind of gets past you, it's like, oh, I used to be able to hit decent drives, but my putting and my chipping was terrible. But yeah, I've never been to the Bettinardi studio. I've heard incredible things. One of my buddy has. How many does Pete have? 2 or 3?
Yes.
Now, and Pete's obviously you have a few, and you got one as well. But I don't. What's the process like? I've never done it. I've never seen it.
Well,
I
mean,
it's very intricate.
Obviously, Bettinardi's is sweet. But you can get putter fit. Obviously, Bettinardi's not the only people that do putter fittings. But at least what I liked about Bettinardi is, well, one, the one-on-one personal experience, like. A lot of shops that you can go to, right? Like you're going to get fit for a putter and they might, you know, have a Quintec machine. They'll just kind of put you on there. They'll see how it rolls. I felt like there, like you're sitting with them for an hour and you're only talking putting, mm-hmm. right? Like most golf shops, you're there, you're talking about kind of the whole bag, everything. Like they're just putters. Now, obviously they have wedges and irons too. I should say that. But, you know, back in the day, like they were just strictly putters. Mm-hmm. So like that's what they knew. And so when I went there, like... Jamie would tell you, like, I've been fit for a lot of shit over the years. Like, I'm trying to get better. I've gone through the bag, gone through everything. I've done putter fittings. Like, I've done all of it. And then when I went there, they did a couple things that I had never done before. Like, the Quintec was was one thing, but they started taking like my wrist to floor measurements, right? And they started taking like where my eyes normally stand over the ball, right? And so like kind of doing like, you know, walking around me and seeing how everything's set up, and like they changed my lie angle and they changed the length of my putter. And those two things right there, I immediately just started making putts because I was seeing, or like my putter was fit to what I was normally seeing.
That's wild.
Right. And so like a lot of the times when you're lined up over a putt and you look at the hole and then you look back, you think you're aiming at the hole and they'll get behind you and you'll take a photo, it'll draw a line. You're aimed like left edge every single time. Right. And then so like you change the lie angle of your putter naturally, you know, if it's more upright, you're going to be over it. If it's flat, you're going to be behind it. You just get like, just imagine just that, getting the right setup. Immediately you're hitting the ball where your eyes are seeing.
Yeah. Like that mirrors there that's over there. I just played down in, gosh, where was I? I was in Florida, and we played, and the gentleman I was playing with pointed out that my setup was off. I've been putting terribly, and he grabbed his mirror from his bag and put it down, and my eyes were way, not over the ball, but past the ball.
Past it. So you were hitting everything left?
And he made a slight adjustment. So if you don't have one of those, that's what you asked Liz for Christmas.
That's one of the best $20 you'll ever spend right there.
Have Cam get that for you.
That was going to be my next thing is, what are you, as better golfers than me, working on or have tips? Because I listen to, you know, I follow all these golf accounts and stuff, and some of the tips and tricks are kind of, you know what I mean? Like, you know, put a inflatable tube around your, you know, your neck and hit that, and if it moves clockwise, then you're doing this. Well, you know, you have all these different things. So I'd be curious to see what kind of tips and tricks you guys have, because right now I've worked on some of the mental thing. You know, we did the last time we played, we did the Colin Morikawa where I broke the roundup in groups of three, so three sets of three,
six or, six six.
Yes.
Yep.
So that really helped me out, right? Because it was, for a while, it was, hey, if you get 15 on these three holes every single time, you'll shoot a 90. But now, thankfully, I've gotten to the point where it's like, okay, cool, let's try to go 14 on each set of three, and then I'll be shooting 84. And things along those lines help me break up holes, because it doesn't necessarily, it gives me grace if I have a bad hole. So in terms of like, you know, Luke's not here, Luke can do all that stuff. What have you worked on that's helped you, or what have you worked on that's helped you get to lower scores, handicaps, and things of like that? I'm going to turn the tables.
You want to go first? You want to go first?
I could go forever, so you go first.
I tried to do too much. So I played with Fields once, and I'm like, hey, Fields, would you kind of try to flight this? Would you try to, like, do you try to draw it in there? And he's like, dude, you're not good enough to do that. Just simple, hit a straight shot and try to hit it in the middle of the green. So now my goal is to try to hit it in the middle of the green. I don't chase a lot of pins anymore. Mm-hmm. And I just try to make, I've been really working on speed that you mentioned, and just make two putts and just get out of the par. I just tend to make things, golf isn't really for my personality. I'm trying to change it. Like if there was like explosions and you could jump off of something, it'd be different. But, ultimately what I'm working on this year, it's all short game.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're trying to get to a plus three.
That's what I want to get to.
So that's a little bit different answer.
Yeah. And I mean, I could sit here and talk for hours. So my first thing that I'll say is I'll shout out. So this Thursday, the episode, I actually had someone interview me, this guy he's my mental coach.
Mm-hmm.
He had me on just to talk about like getting to scratch, and we went pretty deep for like an hour. So if you want to go down the rabbit hole, that'll be a fun one to listen to.
I'm down. I've got my foot. I need material.
There's a lot.
I need material.
And like one of my favorite conversations to have with people is I spent way too much time and way too much money trying to get where I was at like right now with golf. And I shouldn't say too much time and too much money. I'd say, you know, like anything, if you could go do it all over again, you'd do it differently, right? Because of what you know. So like this has been all part of the process. And so what I would say is if I could go back and do it differently, and there's some things you've already done, one, you absolutely 100% have to get fit for golf clubs.
Yeah.
Like I think some people would tell you should have some of a swing. So, you know, I would say screw that. There's a lot of things you can get fit for golf clubs just by knowing your height, your wrist to floor measurement. And like with putter, like how you set up, right? Like you just have a baseline of getting set up. When it comes to the actual game, I would say the most important thing is keeping the ball in play.
Yep.
Like figure out a way to drive the ball and have one shot shape and just play that. Even if it's a 40-yard cut, like Matt Register, my guy Reggie. That guy, he'll tell you all day, he plays a 40-yard cut. He aims it up the left side. It'll start left. It'll come back another 40, 50 yards, but he gets it in the fairway and it doesn't go out of bounds.
Stover too, right? Stover's the same way.
I didn't know that about Stover, but yeah, like that's what I did for a long time.
That's
like,
how I used to be.
Yeah, like just as long as the ball is in play, you're immediately going to shave strokes. And then like the winter is tough because you're not outside. You're going to get turf interaction. I would say like when it comes to putting, there's absolutely no reason you can't be really, really good on like in golf. I think an important thing I've learned is process. Mm-hmm. Kind of like we said earlier in the episode, like, you can do everything right and the ball still not go in the hole, right? Like you think about a really good 8-iron shot from 150. You can hit that thing perfect, center of the club face, right at your target. It's still probably not going to go in the hole, right? Like you're trying to get it close, but you don't expect it to go in. Yeah. But a perfect outcome would be that it goes in. And so the whole point is like creating a really good, repeatable process and then not caring about the outcomes.
That's what that was yours. Like
that was golf for me this year, was like build processes, even though you're going to forget sometimes, like build processes that in 10 years from now they become muscle memory and you don't think about it. Because I go out and I play with the Jamies, the Jeff Prowseys, like all these guys, and you watch them stand over a 5-foot putt and like it could be for the club championship and they look cool as a cucumber because they've done it hundreds and thousands of times. They go through their process and if they miss, they're like, ah, shit, I either misread it or I just put a bad putt on it. But like the process was fine. So I think those are like, that's the stuff that you can control too, right? Is like practice process, practice the stuff that like you're able to actually control. And then like you said, golf's that weird game where just shit's going to happen and it's not going to, some days are going to be really, really bad. But like the more you do that stuff, I think the lower your average gets, and that's what you're going after.
Yeah. And that's what you mentioned is I have the same driver routine, but I never had the same iron routine because I always went based off of feel. So if my first swing was good and I got like good contact with the grass, I would just hit it. If I had a bad one, I'd go 2 or 3. So that's the one I think my 6-iron, because that's my highest iron, to maybe my 9 or my pitching wedge.
Your 6-iron's your highest iron?
Yes.
What's after a 6-iron?
I have a 5-wood and I have a hybrid and a 5-wood after that.
And then driver?
Yes.
Also, you can have more clubs. You just need more clubs.
How many clubs do you have in your bag?
I have driver.
Okay.
And then I have my 5-wood.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. That was a birthday present from Mr. Jamie Rue. Hybrid. 6 through pitching wedge.
3 more wedges and a putter?
Yeah. And then I have a 50, 54, 60 and a putter.
Yeah, so you're missing 2 clubs.
What clubs?
You're allowed to have 2 more clubs.
Technically, they could be whatever you want, but like...
I have a sandwich.
So you're still missing one. You still got another club. This isn't a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, you got another club in your bag. You can add to it.
Because my 6-iron, if I hit it well, goes about 205. My hybrid goes to...
What?
Hi. Hi, my name is Eric.
Your 6-iron goes 205?
Hey, say that in Spanish, will you?
No.
Come on.
Golf muy mal.
You do not golf bad if you hit a 6-iron 205. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why it's the only iron, his last iron.
That's
why. It goes 205.
A 5-iron would go 400 yards.
Yeah, so it goes about 200 if I like just not hit, don't hit great contact on it. And then my hybrid goes about 220-ish. And then my 5-wood goes about 250-ish. And then up there from driver can go anywhere from 275 to 3, depending on however.
Yeah, I'd say you're probably just missing an iron, honestly. I mean, like a 5-iron.
Yeah, my thing was I never felt comfortable hitting high irons because it always felt like my variance for missing was too high. Maybe that was just my scarring from playing these crazy.
Because your 5-irons, your set was probably about this big. Pequeño.
<That's true>. Muy pequeño.
Pequeño.
Muy flaco.
Muy flaco, yes.
Yeah, you can just get a, like in the top of my bag, I have technically a 3-iron, but it's really a 4-iron. But I have like the most forgiving iron you can hit. It's basically a hybrid. Like
yeah, so that's maybe the one club I would add if I needed one would be on the top end of my bag. I just got a new 60 and a new – I got a whole new bag this year. I got fitted for everything. I got a new driver. And my 5-wood wasn't
fitted. Well, who fit you and stopped at 6-iron? Was that Rock?
That was Luke. Because Luke didn't see a need.
Oh, so he just, yeah.
He just said, at that point, he said he didn't see a need for the five because it was the same length as, or like a little bit in between my hybrid, and I felt more comfortable hitting my hybrid.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah,
most just, guys don't hit their six iron that far.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah. There's just an extra club you could put somewhere, whether it's, you got four, yeah, maybe you don't need one, but yeah. you could do a mini driver and a regular driver. A lot of people do that.
That might be fun.
Yeah.
For you might, if you hit the driver really good, a mini driver might be nice for you.
I don't even know what that is.
Think of it as like a three coat. Wood with a, no, it's literally, I don't have one, Jamie. Yeah. it's a driver, but it's usually somewhere lofted between 12 and 14 degrees. And the head is in between like a three wood and a driver.
Oh,
it's literally just like a smaller driver.
Oh, okay.
But they usually
it's a diet driver.
Yeah. It's a small driver.
So what's the use case for it?
A lot of people are using them instead of three woods now, because like the thought process is generally like, again, if you're like a pro or somebody that hits the ball as far as you do, you don't need to hit a three wood. Like you don't have par five where you're 280 out thinking, yeah, I'm going to hit this on the center of the green. Yeah. Usually a par five, you're 250, 260. And like a lot of guys can hit their five wood or their seven wood that far.
Yeah.
And so the mini driver is effectively a second tee club that might go straighter if the driver's not having a good day, or just goes a little shorter. And you hit more fairways with it. So like a lot of guys will play a driver that goes 310, 320, a mini driver that goes 270, 280 off the tee, and then they'll have a five wood that goes 240.
If you walk through a course, you could probably think about where that could be used. I mean, because like you probably, at Winsong.
Tell you at Winsong, one.
Yeah, one. You probably three.
Five and six.
I mean, it's a lot of places you could use that kind of
five,
club.
Yeah. Five and six. Three is.
You get on the back, maybe 11.
Three, I just do that.
13 for sure.
11, 13, maybe 15, depending on your distance with those bunkers left and right. And a lot of people hit it, like you could hit it technically on 17 to be short of that left bunker.
They're fun. I mean, you'd murder it. So that's. Yeah.
I mean, even 18 tee shot, then you don't have to cut off as much. You can 100%. Just bang it at the.
100%. Straight at the bunker.
Like super get in play.
Yeah. No, that's, it's just, I've realized, and this is what's fun because the intricacies of trying to get better now. It's not just getting fitted, right? I got fitted this past year and got a whole new bag, and suddenly I dropped how many strokes just by having clubs that
fit you.
That were more forgiving, everything along those lines. So now it's those intricacies which make it really fun.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say back to the question. You were saying what you're getting better at in terms of.
Well, you said chip. So your short game right now?
I got to put some muscle back on. This of a year, the hip was done a year ago, 2 days ago, and I gotta put some muscle back on.
Yeah.
That speed. Flexibility. This sitting down all day long thing stinks.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been spending a lot more time in the gym working on like my hips and my lower back because I had a swing that like I'm trying to change my swing too to get more just longevity now out of golf. I mean, it's something that it's weird to say, but like I'm thinking about that in my mid-30s. Like I need to build a swing that's no longer, I mean, before I was just trying to hit it as hard as I can. You realize if you use the body effectively, you use maybe some different muscles and use the ground better, you can hit it just as far, if not further, without trying as hard.
That's the weirdest misconception about golf is you don't have to, in any other sport, in football, if you want to throw a Hail Mary, you got to throw it pretty much as far as you can throw it. If you want to, kick a ball in soccer, you have to, use your pace. And, if you're a goal kick, you kick it as far as you can. In golf, the swing doesn't equate distance. And that's a weird mind F for a lot of people.
Think about Tony Hermes. His swing with the driver, like it looks smooth and effortless and he carries it 340.
Yeah.
And he just looks like it's wild how, pro golfers too, like there are some guys that, there's when the tempo is good and you're using the ground. Yeah. I mean, Jake Knapp's ball speed is like 190s.
And he looks like he's falling asleep. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. It is really wild. I've come to learn that like, hey, I don't need to swing so hard out of my shoes all the time to get everything out of this, like get a little bit more longevity out of the swing. But I was going to say, I think, if you have time over the winter, what you would love and what I think everybody should do, even if you don't, apply it and use it all the time, decade golf or the decade methodology, just in terms of the mental, call it course strategy. Of golf side, I never understood until maybe 2 years ago when I started it. And I put it into play a lot more last year, trying to actually use golf, yeah. you know, course management is effectively what it is. And whether you agree with a lot of the, you know, stats and all this stuff, like golf's different for a lot of people, but if you just understand kind of the theory of like how to play the game of golf, I think that's one of the fundamentals a lot of kids grew up with understanding, that a lot of amateurs don't, which is like to a back pin, you know, let's say it's 150. You don't hit your 150-yard club. You can hit your 140-yard club, right? Like if you hit that 150 and it goes over the green, like you're immediately looking at a bogey, right?
Yeah, that's
it's stuff like
book,
that.
That's the book Pete was going to send me. Because we played and he goes, you need to read this book.
And this shout out, Pete. Where you at, Pete?
Yeah, that was exactly. So that was the type of stuff where I call it boring golf. But as an amateur golfer, you like to hit these glory shots, right? You're 250 out and like, oh, I'm gonna take out my 5-wood. I'm gonna put this on the green for eagle, and you end up hitting it out of bounds, right? So things along those lines have been part of this quote boring golf that I say, but it's not boring winning games, and it's not boring shooting low in golf.
Yeah.
So that's where it's funny because it's like, oh, well, you're not hitting the picturesque shot on Instagram.
It's very funny that you say that because I think a lot of people would constitute playing boring golf as almost like safe golf. But the more you dive into it, the more you realize it's less of boring golf and more about just smart golf. So I would say like on a 250 yards out, my theory is, and Decade's theory also, is get the ball as close to the hole as possible. The closer that you are, the closer you will be to the pin. That's mm-hmm. just like, that is stats. You can't argue that portion. Now people would say like, there's bunkers, if water's in play right, those are hazards. So we're trying to stay away from hazards. Mm-hmm. And so the point is, like you mentioned, like hitting it out of bounds. Well, I'd say, okay, well, how do you, your 250-yard shot, where does it normally go? You're like, I don't know, I hit it 30 yards left. I go, okay, find the point that you're aiming to, that 30 yards left is no longer out of bounds. Yeah. That's where you need to aim. And you're like, wait, I have to aim at the right edge of the green? Like, mm-hmm. what about, it's like, well, yeah, you're playing to where your shot normally goes, right? And then that target you're hitting to might not be the green. Might be a nice little, like on hole 9 at Windsong, you know, that big grassy area, yep. like yep. fairway,
yep.
that might be where you're hitting it, right? And so it's less about like, you know, fun, crazy shots. It's more about just like being smart and taking the hazards out of play. And then it's crazy how quick your scores will lower.
Yeah, especially when you say hazards out of play. The other part I wish I could work on is, what's the one we talked about? Is the sand. Is getting, you know, I have no, I know the technique behind the sand play, but it's replicating it. And then I had a really good round going at last time we were playing. I think I was high 70s going into 17 and 18 at Windsong. Hit my drive out of bounds, I think, at Windsong. So I dropped, I hit it right. I hit it out of bounds. Dropped.
Right on 17?
Yeah, hit it right, dropped, hit it into the bunker. And then the bunker on the right is like straight up.
Yeah.
And I hit
Phil Ebner got up and down out of the bunker.
Best shot I've ever seen at Windsong.
I hit this piss missile and got it stuck in the lip.
Oh, in the lip.
I think took it unplayable, ended up getting like a 7, and eventually, you know, or whatever it was, finished whatever it might be. But those types of shots I don't have in my bag.
You will this year.
Bunker shots, I don't. And some of my friends miss. Their misses the bunker because they feel so comfortable getting
out. That's another area. Luke is so good at teaching that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there's unavoidable things in golf like bunker play and like tight lies and all this stuff. I just think, and you're going to be in them, right? You need to understand those shots. The goal is to be in them as little as possible, right? And I would say like that drop, it'd be funny to know, depending where you drop it on that hole, you can have a flyer lie or you can have a dead lie.
Yeah.
The right rough on 17, yeah. Like I've seen people get flyer lies and you can get over the tree with a 60 degree, and I've seen some people like it sits down in the rough, and now you got a club up, and you better like aim way left mm-hmm. of that.
And I should have aimed left, but I tried to like, you know, land it. Of course, me being like, I got to make this is part of the psychology. I was like, I got to make up for my lost shot because I'm in a good way and was playing great, and then I had a disaster on 17, which gave me, I think I got like an 8 or something like that. Yeah. I took an unplayable and I walked to the car, you know, they drove to 18. I just took a long walk.
I can tell you, cause I've done this, right? Like you drop and you're already thinking about making the score you're trying to make or making up for
making
something.
Up for
and you have to go back to, I have a shot in front of me. I need to go through my process. I need to hit the best shot possible. Not, how do I make this? And like the shot behind you is already behind you, right? Like if that was your second shot, you would have played it way different.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Like, and it's just, it's stuff like that that I think is so hard to learn in golf. And even, Jamie's like, I've already seen all, I've been doing this for years.
Talk to me 20 years. Yeah. It's just going to be a different story, course, different day.
But even for me, playing with better people that play faster, I feel at times I've had to keep up with them. And we talked about that when we play with your best friends, is I felt I had to play faster. And he looked at me and he goes, chill out. Like, we're not going anywhere. Because he would see me like kind of run up and take a quick, you know, swing, and I hit a decent shot, but he's like, just take a deep breath. And he said it on, what was that, 15, I think? It was the, you know, the par four up and left.
14.
And it was just like, just take it easy. And eventually I finished off really well, but he's like, we don't need to rush. You don't need to rush. What, are you going to add an extra 3 minutes to our round because you took an extra practice swing or something like that? So chill out. And that type of stuff is something as the competitor in me wants to compete with better players and keep up with them. And, you know, if you run, I want to run faster. And if you jump, I want to jump higher, maybe not with a cast on my foot. But, you know, those types of things are always really difficult for me to kind of balance as I'm the competitor in me, but also still trying to realize, like, I'm just not as good as some people, but being okay with that for the time being.
Yeah, that's a hard one in golf. I mean, you want to play with better people. You always want to beat them. But it's just like anything. Eventually you realize you're a little outmatched, right? And that's why there's handicaps. But that's the fun part, I think, about the sport in general, is when you play with people that are the top of the game or have been to the top of the game or already playing at that elite level and seeing how they play. Like, I've played with Tiziani, John Ellis. We got to play a little bit with Van Rooyen. I know it was like more of a fun thing, but still watching like the way that those people go about the game, you learn so much. You really do. And it's pretty cool because a lot of them, even though they play different, they do a lot of very similar things, mm-hmm. right? They all have processes. They're all thinking about stuff in a very similar way. And it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I mean, Ben, I play with Ben, and Ben's a stud.
Benny's really good.
Yeah.
Climber.
Yep.
Yeah. He can move it too.
Yeah. And I'd be very curious to play with you, at least, you know, this upcoming year, obviously.
Jordan can move it.
You're trying to become a +3 month board. If I shoot +3, I'd be happy. Nonetheless, get my handicap there, which is exciting.
I mean, it's, you know, I'm also realizing I'm at that age. I'm going to have kids in a few years, and like, I'm kind of in this mode where like, I've got maybe 2-3 years to really go at it. So I'm like leaning into it. I stopped playing all these other sports and just, yeah. I mean, I see that's the level that, like, you know, the Reisters and the Hillens, all the guys that compete for our club championship are at. So it just feels like that's where you got to get to. And it's a cool way to measure it because, as you touched on, there's so many different things in golf. How do you measure against all of them, right? Like, at the end of the day, you got to put up a good score. Like, that's, I mean, there's a lot of ways to get the ball in the hole. I think all good players would tell you. That's what mom says, right? Like, a lot of different ways to get the ball in the hole. What matters at the end of the day is your score. That's how it correlates. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because my picture would be like this. It'd be going zigzag.
It's not on your scorecard, though. That's my favorite one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this was awesome. Thank you so much for coming out. Again, congratulations on retirement. We're going to have to probably practice a little bit in the winter once the foot is all right, whether it's at Jamie's place or here.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me. It's been awesome. I'm an avid listener and like to learn now. I'm itching to get back out there and to try to put in the work, because it's, once you kind of get success at anything in life, it's contagious. And I think I'm attracted to the work more than maybe the outcome itself.
The grind's kind of fun.
The grind is fun, but again, it's about the people you're with. It goes back to that. That's what golf's about for me. It never will change. And if you're surrounded with good people, how can you have a bad day?
Yeah. Well, you've got a good coach now, Mr. Luke Elfner. You've got a great mental coach, and now you've got a good podcast to listen to and good audience to tap into. So
this is fun.
Yeah, thanks. This was awesome. Thank you. Thank you for coming over, and come over here and hit balls anytime, man.
Thanks a lot.